Joining me now is a wonderful psychologist, occupational psychologist, researcher and wellbeing expert, Audrey McGibbon. Thank you.
Good morning, George. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. And look, I'm really interested, now you're the co-founder of eConsense, I should add that as well, in this idea of like, so you're the CEO of Optus and you have a debacle. And you probably go and lose your cool at a few people and stomp around. I'm not saying that's what's happened, but I imagine there'd be all sorts of heads of department looking for heads to roll. What is a safe way of managing that in a workplace where we do have a duty of care for the mental well-being of our staff?
What an interesting question. Right. So there's the how do you manage a critical incident safely itself, as in there's somebody dropped the ball somewhere, so how do you have those conversations?
And the pressure's so mounting, like the phones are ringing, press are calling you, ministers are threatening to cut contracts that have kept you alive. I mean, the pressure obviously is huge, and I imagine the urge to kind of seek out the wrongdoing, you're probably not in your most calm and regulated state that you would like to be. What should you do?
Yeah, well, I think you've just answered your own question there. It's like try and retain a calm and regulated state. And, you know, there are a few ways that you could do that. There's unusual ways, like you could just sit in an ice bath for minutes and minutes or every hour to keep yourself calm, because it will work. It's about controlling your vagal nerve. But, you know, Kelly might have a little, you know, might raise even more eyebrows. But, you know, so essentially you're talking about activating your parasympathetic system. So getting the brain to have oxygen in it, to regulate the flow of oxygen through your blood, to stay calm in a crisis. And whether that's the crisis that the CEO of a, you know, massive company is experiencing, or it's the crisis that you have when your printer jams and, you know, you're a small business owner about to do a presentation. It's a similar physiological reaction. Now, so yeah, you got to try and stay calm. Your brain, your emotional part of your brain kicks off roughly 6 seconds earlier than the logical thinking part of your brain. So when you're feeling that mounting pressure, you've really just got to hold your shit together for 6 seconds. And it will, to some degree, compensate. Now, that's in the acute moment. Now, the problem is that we tend to be leading life in a way that we're just lurching from crisis to crisis to crisis, or the crises are so big, you know, the news this week, that it's just a permanent state. So, you know, you can't sit in an ice bath all day and you can't breathe deeply all day.
No.
So then what do you do? And then it's about systemic change. You know, it's, something's not working.
And how do you check on the mental well-being of your team? So let's say whether you've had a crisis or not, one of my roles, if I'm an employer, is to ensure that I'm providing a safe workplace. Now, that's a lot easier to do when I'm looking at exposed wires or, you know, hours that people work. That's kind of, I can see it, I can watch it, I can clock it. But if somebody at work is experiencing, you know, a miserable day in ways that are far more subtle, how do I, as an employer, check that they are coping?
Yeah, well, again, another really good question, because it's something that Australian employers are really having to face into, because the laws have changed. Now, Victoria is a little bit of an exception, so we won't sort of talk specifically. So, you know, being Australia, we do like to have little different things happening all around the place. But, you know, in general, there has been sweeping, significant, widespread change to the employment legislation and codes of practice around Australia, which speak to exactly that. It's not enough just to keep people physically safe. They must be now psychologically and psychosocially safe and healthy. And that means, you know, to your question, how do employers do it? Well, I don't know is the honest answer. But what they're supposed to be doing is magicking up the skills to understand how each individual employee is experiencing the demands of their role, whether they've got overloaded roles, whether they've got too much time pressure, whether they're emotionally out of their comfort zone, if they're clear about what they're doing, if they have a lack of control or too much control, if they are, you know, what are the interdependencies with their colleagues? Is there too much ambiguity? What about what level of emotional support is there? Now,
that's too much. I don't think anyone can do that, can they? I mean, that's a lot.
It is. It's a lot. And although, you know, the spirit of the legislation changes are to be applauded, you know, we do need a bit of a reset, and we do need employees to have better psychological health. My concern at the moment is that the load of the legislation, what it is doing, so if I can, my clients tend to be those who are trying to drive improvements to leadership and culture so that the organization's practices and dynamics and the way it feels in the organization, they tend to sort of be healthier, happier, nicer places to work. Mm. But with the legislation, the time and the dollars that were being invested in those more sort of behavioral, cultural, harder to shift things, that has kind of pivoted. And what we've seen is a sea of compliance training leaders about their new obligations under the law, which is doing two things. It's sucking up the wellbeing budgets that could be being deployed better. Mm. And two, it's really freaking out leaders and employers who, in all honesty, they've got nothing to fear. They're actually doing, you know, as good a job as is reasonably possible to expect.
I just don't know how you're meant to know. Like, you know, one thing, even if you are the most perceptive and say you're even a leader who has done years as a clinical psychologist, say, and now you're in charge of a team doing something else, people are not bound, nor would I think it would be professional, to ask after people's mental well-being in a way that would, you know, I don't know how you structure that conversation without it feeling intrusive, overstepping. I think it could amount to people feeling like, why does my boss keep asking me if I'm okay? Like, I think it would create, as an employee, a great sense of paranoia. Is there something I'm doing that they can see that I'm not aware of? You know, I know it's part of the compliance, but again, it's like, what, you know, do I tell them that I'm on antidepressants or that I'm seeing a therapist outside of work? Surely that's not their business to ask that of me.
It's really tricky.
Super tricky. Go on.
Yeah, you can comply with the law. You could be asking technically the right questions. But the thing with this part of keeping people safe and healthy that's different from the wires and the plugs in the wall is that there is so much inherent subjectivity. Mm. So what makes you well and happy and contented is a little bit different to what makes me that way. Now, there are some common things. So we know generally people need to, you know, have good relationships. They need to feel that their work is, you know, somewhat meaningful. They need to feel free of being harassed and bullied. They need a bit of structure. They need a bit of freedom. They need some stimulation, but not too much. So there are certain things that we can sort of play within the boundaries of. But there is a heck of a lot of subjectivity there. So if you've got someone who's kind of complying with the, you know, I must ask this and I must check in here, but it's not what psychologists would call congruent, so that the words are not matching the tonality and the nonverbal behaviours that are coming with it, that's where I think people are saying, this is either it's just confusing, it's like, you know, my boss is the most driven, task-focused person. Why, after I've worked with them for 12 years, are they picking today to turn around and say, hey, George, just wouldn't mind catching up with you. How are you, George?
How are you really?
And it takes a lot of skills.
It takes a lot of skills, and it takes a lot of, you know, I think you'd either have to treat it as, look, everybody, please gather around. We have to have a session. This is now part of the law. This is, you know, we have a duty of care to keep you safe. Blah, blah, blah. Please come to me with X, Y, and Z, so that we can address it. You know, should you not be, if somebody's being racist or sexist or But, you know, even then, okay, say somebody takes you up on that offer, they may not want you to intervene in a way that you feel, you know, that you might ask for information, then be given information that you're going, well, holy shit, what do I do now? Like, I've got a staff member who is actually really depressed, is feeling really miserable. They've disclosed all this information. Mm. Now what do I do? Because I don't, I have a duty, but I don't necessarily have the means of then rectifying this situation.
That's right. So, I mean, one of the, so the principle of getting people to talk about the whole of, you know, what's going on for them and being able to express when elements of their work are damaging them, like being able to have that conversation, is a good thing, but we're light years away from both employees and employers or employees and their managers being able to have those conversations because, you know, we've really been for decades now been trying to do more with less. We're all busy. It is tough because people have too much to do. And so what's happened is the laws have changed and along comes the kind of this extra load on already overloaded managers and leaders in many instances. And whilst it's well-intended, designed to help employees, actually it's creating that kind of nervousness in both groups because it's been dropped into a system and a context that just doesn't have any space to deal with this. No. And so how do we work back from that and sort of say, okay, there are certain things that you can and you cannot do, but could everybody just pause for a moment? So we've got senior leaders who are saying, look, I just don't really think I can't see the point in trying to be a good people leader anymore. Because like whatever I say or do, I'm concerned that I'm going to get it wrong. Mm. And the sad thing there is they're actually, generally speaking, extremely well-intentioned, but they too are overworked. So ironically, you've got these new psychosocial health regs that are now making, in most cases, the psychosocial health of leaders worse. And, you know, that can't be really good. So you would improve psychosocial health for everyone if we could just take a look at how reasonable is it.
Yeah, and I think that's the key point, how reasonable it is. Look, if you'd stick around, I really want to get into where this legislation came from, what it was designed to fix, and, yeah, the implementability of it. I think I just made up a new word. Anyway, Audrey McGibbon, if you'll stick around, that would be wonderful. Thanks.